everybody. So you've almost made it completely through ApacheCon, and there's no more coffee, no more food breaks, so I could just go almost as long as I want, right? So welcome to Configuring Apache Camel for the Cloud. So I'm really happy to be here on the Camel track to talk about some of my Camel experiences over the past 2.5 years. Before I get started, I'd just like to get a sense of the audience. How many people are running Camel right now in their organizations? Okay. How many folks are running, and even if you're not running Camel, how many people are using cloud or cloud infrastructure? Okay, quite a bit. Great. Of those folks using cloud infrastructure, how many are deploying just to straight VMs? Like EC2, okay. How many are containerizing and deploying to just straight VMs with Docker? Okay, yep. How many are using an orchestration tool like Kubernetes or Rancher or, okay? Very good. Okay, so great. We have a good mix. So hoping to talk about all of those different options since they are kind of part of the evaluations that we were doing for a specific client. But first, let me tell you just a little bit about myself. And it would be helpful if my clicker worked. Otherwise, we'll just do this the old-fashioned way. Oh, there we go. All right. So I'm an independent consultant from Chicago. So I do a lot of work in the Midwest, mostly with JVM, always with programming. I'm hands-on, and I do a lot of work for my clients building and designing systems. I am an ASF member. I have been for the past 3 years. The projects that I am... PMC committer is Apache Tika. One of my interactions with Camel is the Tika component in Camel. I help contribute that. And then Apache Felix, I'm a committer on that, which is the OSGI framework that Caraf, if you're at the Caraf track at all, that runs on. So we'll be talking a little bit about that as well as other deployment options today. I have two podcasts that I just like to promote for shameless self-promotion. The Java Pub House is a Java-based podcast for anything JVM on just kind of tutorial-type things. So if you're going for a run, you want to learn about JMX, you want to learn about Graal, you want to learn about anything going on in the Java ecosystem and just kind of want a beginner start here sort of podcast, Java Pub House is the one. I think we're like one of the number one, if not the number one Java podcast out there. I run it with Freddie Gimme, who is currently in Seattle, works at Expedia. And then Off Heap is a newscast I do with a whole crew of people in the Chicagoland area. And that is more of like a talking heads news podcast. Since the Java Posse is gone, we've decided to come in and do basically a Java-based newscast. So both of them have Twitter accounts. So if you want to learn more about any of those, Java Pub House, Java Off Heap. And if I've said Java enough, I'm also a Java champion, so I do a lot of work in the Java space. So let's talk about Camel. So about 2.5 years ago, I had a client. This client had been an early e-commerce client. They had 30 years worth of technology, completely new management, technical management, and they had brought me in as an integrator to try to help them tie a number of services that they had together, new, legacy. The natural thing for me to reach for when I knew I had a lot of different things, over 30 years worth of different protocols and technologies, was Apache Camel because of how it can integrate to almost anything. You have components out of the box for SOAP. You have components out of the box for that do REST for you, HTTP messaging. So I knew whatever they were going to throw at me, I was probably going to have something unless it was, you know, straight calls to the mainframe. And I think they may actually even have some things for that, too, in the extras. But during this implementation, they were also doing a move to the cloud, which I hadn't done a ton with my other clients. So there was a lot of learning and a lot of evaluation we did trying to figure out what the right way to deploy Camel in the cloud and configure Camel in the cloud, knowing what the constraints of the cloud are. So this talk is really about configuration. So what do you mean by configuration? Because configuration means a lot of different things. The way I look at configuration, the way I'm going to break down this talk, is there's two different types of configuration. It's very much like requirements. There's your functional configurations, which detail how the application behaves. So just like functional requirements, which are detailing behavior of the system. And then there are non-functional configurations, which are more, how am I deploying it? How am I packaging it? How am I dealing with service discovery you're going to run into in the cloud because it's very different than just running things on-prem. So starting, since this is about the cloud, some of the more interesting things are actually down to the functional things, because there's very little functionally you can't do on-prem that you can't also do in the cloud. But the non-functional things you have to deal with deploying to the cloud are kind of makes this a little bit more different, or some of the differences. So cloud environments, basically you don't have a lot of the guarantees that you have in your on-prem infrastructure. Just being able to tap into a machine, depending on how you're deploying, may not be a possible thing for you. Your storage, like if you're deploying things, if you're storing logs, they may just go away and evaporate because most of the storage is ephemeral. Network addresses, things are moving around. Network addresses may be changing. I can't just pin an IP as easily as I could if I had complete control over the network. Somebody else is controlling the network. So some of these challenges with cloud environments are the things that lead us to do things a little bit differently when we're putting CAML out there. So the very first thing I want to talk about is packaging options. So I'm aware there are a ton more. There has been presentations today on CAML K. I think there's another talk on Quarkus. Because of when we were doing a lot of this work, some of those options were not available. There's even more than I have up here, but these are the three that we looked at as far as packaging and what capabilities that these containers or non-containers could give us when we were deploying things into the cloud. So let's start with Apache Carafe. So there is Apache Carafe track next door. So if you like what you hear about Carafe, there is other things that you can learn about. JB is around, who's the PMC chair, can answer a bunch of questions. In fact, I went to his talk before I came here, and there's certainly some things I would like to adjust in my slides after talking to him, but we'll talk through those things as we go through my presentation. So some of the advantages of Carafe is CAML is a feature, meaning it's just kind of almost out of the box, it works. You have OSGI-based class loading, and OSGI is one of the things that can really help you working with a framework like CAML, because it is going to isolate a lot of the classes from one another. When you have a project that gets almost into a jar hell where you're pulling in jars from all over the place, the chances of you getting conflicts and transitive dependencies that are overriding things, making things non-predictable, become much, much higher. So by using Carafe, it kind of eliminates some of those things because it is being deployed in an OSGI container. The class loading, the features basically are packaged themselves. The versions are fixed so that they're wired together with the versions that you're expecting and that are tested as part of the project. So the OSGI-based class loading helps us there. This is another thing I've experienced on Tika. Tika is another jar hell type project, except we just put everything together and pray for the best. Other things that you get in Carafe that you really don't get anywhere else is if you like CLI, SSH access, there are features built into Carafe that even if where you're deploying your container won't let you have SSH access, Carafe has the ability of you to be able to tap into some of your application service containers over SSH in order to do certain things on the container at runtime. There's monitoring and other things that we'll get into. So let's talk about what it takes to put CAML on Carafe with our cloud options. So the very first thing is we're just going to add a repo. So when you add CAML as a feature in Carafe, that basically tells it where to find all of the other components that it needs to make CAML work. once you've added that, so think of this as just like adding a Maven repository. Once you add that, you can install different things to the container based on which CAML components you're using. So you have all of the CAML features available as OSGI bundles, or really features. So some of them are multiple bundles put together, so they don't just, you know, smash everything into a shaded jar like you'll see around. But you can install just the features you want. And then once you install the features, they're installed as OSGI bundles with their dependencies. So these go into your Carafe container and become active, and your container is running. I don't have to stop the container to do any of this. I can push features out on demand if I want to. All of this is available just by typing CLI commands or SSHing into the running Carafe process. So you'll see some of the ones that are there. The other thing you get from Carafe that can be very, very useful in the cloud is you get the CLI actually has CAML-specific commands. So even, again, if you don't have shell access to restart or stop certain things that are running, you're able to go in and start routes, stop routes. You're able to stop the entire context if you want to. You can get statistics on the routes. That's probably one of the more useful things, is just trying to get data out is, okay, how many failures do I have? What's the time that this route takes on average? What's the maximum? What's the minimum? I can get that from the route, what is it? The endpoint stats command, where I can get some of the, just the details about how that thing is performing in real time. I can view what the configuration looks like. So CAML allows you to use the DSL, the Java DSL. You can use XML to configure the routes. There's a lot of different things I can use to build them. These commands will basically print out whether you've used Java, Blueprint, as XML, so that you can see what your DSL looks like on the machine while it's running. So once you've installed your components, there is a little bit of work that you have to do to make it easy to add other route builders. So if you've been to any of the earlier presentations, how many folks have used CAML before? I just want to make sure. Okay. So when you're configuring CAML routes, especially if you're using the Java DSL, so we decided to use the Java DSL over XML. One of the reasons we did that is just code completion from Java. You could basically use builder patterns and you get code completion, which is really, really nice. But in order to start the context in Carafe, you have to build basically an OSGI CAML context, which can be really useful because what you can do is then create a service tracker, which is an OSGI component, that listens anytime a bundle is a jar file in an OSGI container that spins up with a route builder. So if the route builder is registered as an OSGI service, that then can just be automatically added to the context by combining the service tracker in the activator. So we activate it, we start the route, we register the context as a service in the OSGI container. We start the route service tracker. The route service tracker listens for any time a route builder is registered to the OSGI container, adds it to the context. So cool things we can do with that is we can add jar files on the fly, and those are added to our existing CAML context without restarting. And it is very much like a spring feel. So if I go to my actual route builder configuration, I can use the SCR OSGI services to basically specify a component, define it as a route builder, and then that route builder configuration gets registered as an OSGI service, added to the context. The next thing you know, your route is available. This is just registering like a NETI component with the REST endpoint, so this is the REST DSL. So I have kind of dynamic ability to add code to my container as I'm going through and building things out. So within Carafe, there's two different ways to think about deployment. So these are kind of the things I would go to get started on a dev environment. But when I'm talking about deploying to production, deploying to a Docker container, whether or even deploying to a VM, I want to think about what I want to do with Karath, because some of the dynamic things I may want, some of the dynamic things I may not want. So there's two different ways to look at it. Is a build time distribution, which is basically you build out all of the jar files that you want in your Karath container beforehand. And when you start it up, instead of typing those commands that you saw at the beginning, it's already there and the jars just start when you start your container. The other way is using a Karath subproject called Seller, which allows you to do more dynamic things with a cluster of Karath services. So let's talk first about the build time distribution, because my client was a bit new to OSGI, so they didn't want to take the risk of having all of these dynamic things. So what we did is we were able to scale it back by building a distribution, which is a little bit more static out of the box. So the distribution is built by using the Karath Maven plugin. So they have a Maven plugin that actually builds basically a zip file or a tarball that has all of the things that you would need in your Karath container in a single spot. So to use it, you just add it as a plugin to your Maven POM, and then you can define what features within Karath you want to be installed in your container. These features can, so these are just kind of the baseline features, and then any custom features you build. So usually what I do when I build these out is I'll create a provision feature that has all my camel stuff in it. So I can put, okay, I want camel quartz, I want camel netty, I want camel HTTP 4 for my REST calls out, and I can define all these things, and then it gets built into this zip file. So when it builds, I have this in my target directory from Maven, and then what it makes it really easy to do for my cloud deployment is I can just, it's already in a zip file. Docker knows how to deal with zip files and throw them into an image, right? So all I have to do is, even if I don't want to care about the versioning, maybe I'm using Docker for my versioning, I can just distribute the tarball by using the add command, and then I expose the ports that I want exposed. Now, I may make this smaller and only expose the port that I want HTTP on, but if I want to be able to log in over SSH into the CLI, I may expose 8101, and if I want to be able to use the web console, which is a typical thing in OSGI, I may expose 8081, which is where Karath runs its web console. So I have different options that I can do depending on how secure I want these containers to be. And then it's just being able to run the Karath start commands. So the pros of the distribution is predictable. And this is actually one of those things that I learned in the last session from JB, is they actually have it where you can specify a static framework where, all the CLI stuff that I was showing earlier, all of that is disabled. So it really is an immutable deployment. It takes all of the things out where you can just do things on the fly, which you may or may not want. During a sidebar, I was talking to some folks, well, what if you want to install debugging commands? Or something that allows you to introspect a class in your container. What if you want to disable heap dumps, which is another thing you can run in your Karath, just a system heap dump, and it'll take a heap dump for you. It's based on Maven. Most folks that are in the Java space know Maven. There is talk about expanding it to Gradle and other build tools, but those aren't there yet. And as we saw, it's easily combinable with Docker. The other option is Seller, and this is more the dynamic thing. So if your company is more familiar with OSGI and you want to be able to throw things at the container on the fly, this gives you some options that that you can take advantage of if you're willing to do a little bit of work to set up the cluster, the Karath clusters. So with this, you would install Seller, you configure it, it uses Hazelcast as its clustering mechanism, and Hazelcast actually has a bunch of different extensions, so if you want to deploy it, using service discovery, there's ways to do service discovery with etcd, which is what my client went with because they weren't deploying to native Kubernetes, at least not with the initial. This again allows you to make changes on the fly. So in order to set up Seller, you can ins- once you set up Seller as a component in Carafe, instead of running just the regular feature installs, you install things to the cluster. So once you wire things together, you may have three Carafe instances set up that don't have anything on them, but then you can add the repository using cluster feature, repo add. Then you're going to use cluster feature install. You'll install to the default cluster, camel, and then you can start using your camel commands on the cluster. So what you end up with after you list and you install it is you see that you have some of the common camel jar files, and you can install features this way. So, you know, whatever you're using, as long as those Carafe instances are in the cluster and they're able to communicate with each other through the Hazelcast clustering, you can do installs. Now, this also works with just Maven commands. So if I have a client jar of things I've developed so that I have some route builders in camel that I want to deploy out to the cluster, I can do a Maven install very similar to how I added the repo. It's just a Maven and then basically the namespace of my jar file. I can push new code to my instance. So some of the pros, again, Hazelcast-based clustering, if you're familiar with Hazelcast, there's a lot of just out-of-the-box clustering options that make clustering it easy. You're able to get things to work more dynamically, whether you're pushing configurations, new client jar files, installing features on the fly. There's also capabilities for distributed logging and eventing. We didn't look into that too deeply, again, because this client was a little bit more risk-averse with having things pushed out there in the cloud for some of the reasons that we mentioned before about having things where the storage is could go away. Because all of these dynamic things, if you're deploying with a Docker container or you're deploying to an image, let's say you're taking an image of EC2 and a snapshot, all this dynamic stuff that you ran after the fact, it goes away, right, when you redeploy. So that is a risk that you have to kind of figure out if you want to deal with that. But if you have a lot of long-running things or you have processes in order to bring the containers up to date, that helps. So overall, just Carafe, when to use Carafe. So if your project is using a lot of camel components, you know, some of the other options I'm going to present later, put them all in the same class loader, where if you're using a lot of things, it can be your risk of having conflicts as you upgrade and add things to your installs is going to rise with how big it is. Now, if you're doing microservices and you're using two or three components, maybe Carafe is overkill in that case because you maybe don't need that kind of isolation. If you're looking to add features dynamically, Carafe is able to do that for you, where a lot of the other options I'm going to present, it's more of a build time thing if you're going to add features. This, again, can work at runtime, and you can get new capabilities on the fly. And then finally, this option has the CLI ability. So just being able to install things and monitor things through the CLI is an advantage you have with Carafe that you're not going to have with a Spring Boot or a standalone. All right. So let's talk a little bit about Spring Boot. So how many are familiar with Spring Boot? Okay. So Spring Boot, just really quick overview of Spring Boot. Spring Boot is a framework developed by Pivotal that allows you to build a single jar file that has an embedded version of Tomcat that has, or potentially other application servers, that is very opinionated on the libraries and the things that it does, but it gives you a lot of functionality out of the box because it does follow a very specific convention with the features and abilities that it has. And we'll go into how some of that helps you with your camel deployment. Specifically with camel, it will manage the context for you. So all of that code that I showed you in the OSGI activator where you're creating the context by hand, you're registering to a service tracker, you don't have to do it. So if on your project you're looking to get started really, really fast and you don't want to worry about the context, Spring Boot will manage that for you. You're just really worrying about the routes and the configurations. The other thing that's really, really cool about Spring Boot is they have this actuator API that comes with Spring Boot. The Actuator API can integrate them to Prometheus if you're using Prometheus to gather statistics. It can give you health check information. It can give you statistics, metrics on your application while it's running, some of which are similar to JMX. So if you're using an APM or something, maybe you don't need it. But it also has some CAML-specific things, which I'm going to talk about as I go on. So how do I get CAML working in Spring Boot? So Spring Boot has a CAML starter package. So CAML is another one of the platforms that's supported by Apache CAML. In order to do this, so I have to add a BOM file that gives all my Spring Boot dependencies. I'm going to add the CAML Spring Boot dependencies as well as a separate BOM in my POM file. Again, I'm doing this all in Maven. It's an Apache project. There's ways to do this in Gradle and other build tools as well. After that, I'm adding the Spring Boot packages or dependencies that I want. So I don't have to add all of these, but in order to take advantage of a lot of the capabilities, like Actuator, I need to add additional dependencies. If I want it to be web-based, I'm going to add the Spring Boot web starter so that I can get HTTP-based services. If I want to use Spring Cloud, which is another big advantage and a lot of power that comes with the Spring ecosystem, I'm going to add a Spring starter config to this. Then I add my Spring Boot CAML starter, and then any CAML components that I want to deploy in my Spring Boot application. So I don't know if there's support for every single one yet, but the support has been expanding very, very quickly. So if folks know that there's specific ones that don't work in Spring Boot, I'm not sure what the gaps are, but a lot of the major ones that you use with CAML are going to have starters with them. After you do that, this is going to look very similar to the OSGI. The craft build-out is you can use your Spring component. You're registering your service, your services route builder as a service. You can use any of your Spring annotations in here with some limitations, which we'll talk about. And then you're just writing CAML code. You're configuring your route. So very, very simple, no context code, just my POM file, my routes, and I'm ready to go. One of the biggest advantages to using Spring Boot is a lot of their cloud services. There's lots of capabilities that you can take advantage of that work very nicely with CAML. One of which is service discovery. So if you're using Carafe, there are ways to use DOSGI to do service discovery. I'm not going to go into that. I have a mixed history with DOSGI, so there's certain things I like about it, certain things I don't. So I'm leaving that out to talk about some of the service discovery here using Council, which is a key value store that Spring Boot has cloud integrations to do service discovery. So if I have a service and a consumer of that service that are both using CAML, and I'm deploying into a cloud environment, those services might not know where each other are. Again, this goes back to the issue with the cloud where I have IP addresses that might change. I have a lot of different things that are moving around. If you're familiar with some of the Netflix APIs, they've created a bunch of APIs to do this. This is just another way to kind of do it very similar to the Netflix APIs. So if I have a Spring service that's using CAML, I configure it to talk to my Council server, which is my key server. So it's very much like if you've heard of etcd, if you've heard of Zookeeper, they're all a little bit different, but they all do very similar things, and they all work with Spring Cloud Config. So what'll happen is, as I'm using the service registry components in CAML, is when I start my services, the producer of the services, they're going to register themselves with the key store, with the host name and the port that it's running on. So even if things are moving around, ports are changing, host names are changing, IP addresses are changing, those changes are going to go up to a global state in Council. When I'm trying to call that service, the first thing that's going to happen is my consumer application is going to talk to Council, which has my global state, my services, that I'm trying to find out where they are. Because at this point, I know what the name of the service I want to call is, but I don't know where it is. So I'm going to ask, where is my service? Council is going to respond with the same host name and port that were registered with the service, the producing service. And then at that point, it can make a call to the service, and then the service can respond with whatever that service is doing. So this is conceptually how it works, but let's look at the code. So if I want to use this configuration within my Spring Boot application, I use a from F. So, you know, folks that have done some CAL, when you're using the Java DSL, you're using from. You could do a from D, which is from dynamic. The from F allows me to use the service methods. So I define service, colon, and then I name it. And then after that name, it's just like I'm writing camel in order to define my my consumer route. So this is accepting an HTTP request in using Undertow. So I'm registering it on localhost with a random port number, which could change. Let's say I'm running a bunch on a single VM, which people do. If you're running in a VM-based environment, you know, usually VMs are big enough to hold multiple instances, so we don't usually just deploy one. We'll deploy several. And this is going to give the port that's registered in a way that they shouldn't conflict with each other. You'll notice that there's a second from on here that's registering something under the same name, but on a different port. So let's say I've got a load balancing scenario where I want to load balance between two services. I can register them to the same service, and then the council is going to basically do some load balancing for me when it's sending the IP addresses back. So how does this look? So this is the service side. How does this look on the client side? So on the client side, I'm defining a Spring Boot application, and then I'm enabling the discovery client, which is an annotation that tells Spring to do a whole bunch of different things so that I don't have to write the code to do that. Some of which is going to be based on, hey, where's my council server, right? So there is some configuration to this. When I make a service call, I'm going to set that REST service call to go and call a dot service call my service. So that's the same service that was registered in the service API. So the REST call here is just simple REST DSL that's saying I have an endpoint called service call that somebody can make an HTTP request into. That is then going to send a GET request to the service call direct route. And then that is going to find Cal Council, find out where my service is, get some host names and ports, and then it's going to send the body that I send to the to that direct route out to the service, to my service, and get a response back. And if you call this multiple times, you'll end up alternating between those two services. So they're load balanced. And there's ways to configure it to do that differently if you don't want round robin. But these are some things that you can use with CAML in a Spring Boot application to do service discovery. So let's talk a little bit about Actuator. So Actuator is a bunch of endpoints that are exposed on /Actuator on your Spring Boot application, and then whatever the name of the Actuator is. And these are all mostly out of the box. The most you usually have to do is add some dependencies to your POM in order to make them active. With regard to CAML, there's a few that are fairly interesting that give you some functionality. Well, the first one is you don't have to do anything but enable the info actuator, and you get statistics on your CAML context. So this shows up if you're using CAML within Spring Boot. You'll get the name, you'll get the version, you'll get how long it's been running, and the status of the context, which is somewhat useful, but not always entirely. But the bigger and more useful actuator is the CAML routes actuator. That actuator will give you information about the routes that are running. So when we were looking at Carafe, Carafe has CLI commands that can expose you know, which routes are running, what their state is, and I can interact with them. The CAML routes can give me similar information in a Spring Boot application. I may not be able to do much with it as I could with Carafe, but These routes do have the ability to actually modify the route state, start and stop, things like that via post commands for my specific route. This is something that I've just started looking at when I was looking at Boot and Camel. So there are also ways to disable it, but I'm not sure exactly. I don't remember exactly all the commands that you can do with this actuator, but there is ways to modify the state of your Camel object or your Camel routes in Spring Boot. So let's talk about one of the limitations that I found that was actually kind of interesting. One of the things I like to do with Spring Boot is try to add a little bit of dynamics to it using Spring Cloud Config, which is basically a server that can centralize all your configuration. So if you have @value annotations in your Spring applications, those can come from somewhere off the network so that all your Spring Boot applications are consuming the same configuration. Within that, you can create beans that are in a refresh scope, meaning if I change it over the network, then I can call an actuator refresh, and it will actually refresh the config without having to stop the container. Spring is notoriously static with its deployments, so being able to change things is actually a little bit more difficult, so sometimes you do want to just change your configuration and leave the thing running. When I tried to do this with Camel, at least the route builder, it did not work. One of the reasons it did not work is it doesn't appear to restart the Camel context when you fire that refresh scope. So even though the value might change, the context doesn't restart. So there are some limitations to how much dynamics you can get using Spring Boot. One interesting experiment could be trying to use the activator to restart the context after you've done the refresh, but it kind of feels like a gap in Spring Boot where really, why don't you just restart the context or figure out a way to marry the Spring context and the Camel context together. But it was just something to be aware of. So Spring Boot, when to use? When you're integrating with a bunch of other Spring infrastructure. So if you're using Spring already within your enterprise, and you're using a lot of the cloud config services, you've set up Prometheus to scrape actuator Prometheus. There's a lot of cool stuff that you can get out of Camel with this. There's also some examples on how to get, you know, even more Camel information in Prometheus if you look at some of the Camel examples. If you're trying to do service discovery, so if you're using Kubernetes, if you're using kind of a managed orchestrator, most of them already have ways of dealing with this, so this may not be all that important. But let's say you're deploying out to raw Docker containers or you're deploying out to VMs. Most of the time, you're going to have a configuration service like what I had with Council to try to have things discover one another. Because you still need to have that capability if you're using EC2 instances or just VMs up in the cloud since those IP addresses can shift on you. So when you're in those circumstances, you're not using Orchestrator, it's really nice to have service discovery. Especially because you get a lot of the load balancing that you, again, get with a Kubernetes if you're using it. But, you know, not everybody wants to use Kubernetes, and I'm actually quite fine with that. If you're using supported components, and again, like, if you're using the supported components and not using a lot of them is also the caveat I would put, just so you don't have jar conflicts or anything else that could come up over time. The Camel team does a really good job of making sure there aren't jar conflicts, but, you know, again, you're making a long-term decision, projects change pretty frequently, so just something to be careful about. The last option is standalone, and this is one that seems to be gathering a lot more steam, especially I was at some of the Camel K talks earlier. I'm guessing this is the way they're going with their framework, because you don't necessarily need a container if you're just compiling it and throwing it up in a container in Kubernetes. Some of the biggest advantages of this, minimal footprint. So I'll show a slide where it kind of compares the three approaches on size of the deployment artifact, but standalone is the smallest. It's less complex. You don't have to worry about configuring a container. You're just running Camel. You're configuring Camel. Your developers just need to know Camel. In all the other examples, there is a certain amount of knowledge you need to know about Carafe. There is a certain amount of knowledge you need to know about Spring Boot or Tomcat or whatever application server you're running it on. Camel has the ability to put, a Jetty or put Netty inside of it or Undertow or a number of different application server technologies. So you don't necessarily need a container to do web services in CAML. You can just use CAML to do that. And then by doing that, you're just worried about your CAML configuration. So that's what I mean by the REST DSL not requiring a container. So standalone, so I'm kind of cheating here on Caraf and giving it a bad name, saying it's 40 megs, because that has all of the default features in it. If you strip Caraf down, Caraf can get a lot smaller. Spring Boot with Tomcat, again, most of this is Tomcat, most of it's not CAML, but that does, out of the box, give you a smaller footprint than a fully featured Caraf instance, and standalone cuts an additional 5 megs off of it just for a simple CAML application. So this is, you know, not scientific, it's just kind of give you an idea of what the sizes are. One of the things I like to mention with the cloud, though, is like, what is the cheapest thing in the cloud? Storage. So unless you're running a lot of containers, this may not matter at all. It really depends. So for standalone, most of the magic just comes from Maven and no specific crazy plugins. We've had the Maven assembly plugin for a very, very long time, and it turns out it works just fine with Apache CAML. Using the description ref jar with dependencies, you pull in all of your transitive dependencies and build an Uber jar out of those dependencies, and you have one big fat Uber jar with all of your CAML and your client code in it. Very simple. Then you point it to a main class, and all that's doing is writing the manifest main class in your Java container, and it starts up with the java-jar command and the name of your jar. So very simple to put in a container, Docker container. The code, as far as boilerplate to get it to work with the main method, they've developed a CAML main class that does some of this for you. So you just define it. You have your Java main, which is what you're binding to. You create the CAML main. You can add some configuration classes, and then you can add all your route builders. So not a lot of dynamics here. This is probably on par with Spring Boot with dynamics. And then your CAML routes start. You are on your own for monitoring. You don't have your actuator. This is really, really bare bones. But fortunately, CAML has a bunch of stuff. If you want to, start spitting JMX out, you might look at some of the CAML components to fill the gaps of what you don't have using some of these heavier weight frameworks. So standalone. When you're maximizing density, if you're going to have 1,000 CAML containers, these differences in size may make a difference. There's less magic. I think some of these I've kind of gone through. So let's move on and talk a little bit about the functional configuration. So we talked a lot about packaging, a lot about deployment, a lot about service discovery, the non-functional. Some of the things that were unique to the cloud, for my client, was the ability to do feature toggling because they wanted to push things in dark and turn things on and off. And then just have error handling and circuit breaking. The client had some demands where traffic would just do this, go extremely up, extremely down. So having the ability to be fault tolerant and circuit break on certain things to protect some of that 30-year-old stuff was very, very important to them. Because that 30-year-old stuff was literally two servers in the back of a room somewhere that if they broke, they had the compiler, but nobody knew how it worked. It was just restart and hope that my $5 billion company doesn't go down the drain. Very interesting strategy. That's why I'm not mentioning who they are. So these features were very important to them. So with CAML, you have a number of configuration-based endpoints. All of those key value stores that I mentioned have CAML components. So you're able to interact with those things directly with CAML without using any sort of magic framework. And that's what we ended up doing. We ended up integrating to etcd. They had a failed Kubernetes cluster that, they had some experience using etcd. It's like, hey, I use etcd. Why don't we use etcd for our feature toggling? So managing changing configuration turned out there was two different ways that we could do this. It's change triggers and basically long polling. So within CAML, if you're using etcd, you can change configuration by just using HTTP commands. So I can do a put and put a feature toggle to true, And etcd within its cluster registers that feature toggle as true wherever I might call it from. Now, if I want Camel to talk to it, I could set a timer, which is kind of the push-based thing. So on a timer, every 30 seconds, I can reach out to that feature toggle and see if it's still on within my Camel run. Very simple code. And then based on that, I can use a service, whether it's a Spring Boot service or an OSGI service, to take that feature toggle to turn the code that I'm using on or off. Very, very common use case for that. The other thing I can do is with the etcd component, I can also, if I have a directory of feature toggles, let's say I have several of them, I can add recursive equals true, so question mark recursive equals true, and then I will get all of the configuration options under that folder. So if I'm trying to manage a bunch of things, I can get them all, every 30 seconds, I get my features, my enable features in, and I can inject those into my Camel routes with the Spring service, or with a Carafe OSGI configuration. The other option that you get with etcd is a watch, which means etcd, you put a long pole out to the etcd over HCP, and then the long pole is broken when the etcd keys change, and then you get the configuration change. This can be more efficient. It can also be more costly. My problem with long polling is usually networks have timeouts in them, and they just end up churning anyways, so the timer or the long pole end up being sort of the same. But if your network, if you don't want these configurations firing too often, you can use the watch command in order to limit the amount of times it goes off, as long as you don't have network timeouts that are going to trigger them early. Now, with Kubernetes, you have some different features. Now, Kubernetes has a concept called config maps, which are the same thing, which are kind of the same thing in that you can use API calls to pull them into your configuration in your application. So config maps look somewhat like this. So my feature flag now turns into a config map with the value, a label to that config map, and then the namespace could be a dev environment or wherever I want to put it. Changing config maps is basically pushing the YAML up to my Kubernetes cluster so that config map is now available to applications deployed in that namespace. Now, switching to this, so when we decided we were going to move into Kubernetes with this application, it turned out to be really simple. We had the timer-based things, and Camel has a Kubernetes config map component, which we swapped out for the etcd component. It's etcd under the covers, but it's able to call the Kubernetes default service and get a list of all the config maps with our application labels. So this gives us the ability for feature toggling within Kubernetes with minimal changes to our application. We did end up going with the timer-based routes so that we could do this sort of thing. You know, when you think about, you know, the Spring Boot has this abstraction layer over all of these cloud configs, you can kind of do the same thing with Camel. With a little bit of work. So dealing with failures, there's two different use cases that we dealt with failures. I'm going to speed up a little bit because I've got a few minutes left. With Camel, you can use Hysterex as a circuit breaker. So there's a Hysterex component. You can pull it in. You can configure it in Camel. One of the things we found is there are certain features. Well, let me explain first. So when you deploy it that way, Hysterex works on a specific instance of the application. So if you have a dozen Camel containers out there, based on the state of Hysterex in that application, those circuits that allow the application to talk to the backend services, again, this is the 30-year-old stuff that's not meant to scale, may be open or closed, right? Depending on how many failures have happened in that application compared to the other ones. So you may have some where the circuit's open and some where the circuit's closed. Just by using the raw Hysterex. But what we found is there are some times that we want to just turn it off across the board, and Hysterex turned out to be very difficult to do that with. So we used our key-based option, very similar to what we had before, in order to do global circuit breaking on specific features. And to do this, we had the etcd component both doing reads from etcd as well as pushes. So when the circuit breaker would trip, if we wanted to trip globally under a certain circumstance, we could use the CAML etcd component to do a write to etcd as well to turn it off, and then when the other applications read that, it killed the feature across the board in the entire cluster. This ended up being very useful for some of those more fragile features where it's just like, yeah, we just need it to turn off and the rest of the site to work. In conclusion, you know, these are just, again, some of the learnings. There are a ton of different slices that you can look at in the cloud. So this was ours for the project that I was working on. I hope this has given you at least some ideas on different options you have working in the cloud with CAML. There's a couple more talks on different things that you can do on the cloud. I'm hoping that I didn't duplicate a lot of them. Depending on what your needs are, CAML has a number of different ways to meet them. Happy writing. Any questions? Do I have time for questions?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yes?
So, what did you use console for? To just discover the REST service or to discover any of the routes?
So, the when you register the endpoint in the service, it registers it with a name, which is a route. So it's really the HTTP endpoint that's being registered, not the route. Undertow is basically exposing an HTTP socket that can be connected to. So in that case, it's, okay, here's the host name, here's the port. HTTP is open. I'm making the call over HTTP. Was that your question? Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Enjoy your ApacheCon.